This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 46, Longer Than Sachin. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we compare ourselves to Sachin Tendulkar, that's arrogant, and we answer questions on how to deal with a coach who isn't quite in the same agreement as a player, and also what kind of training you need to do with an under-15 cricket team. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Well, Sachin, he only managed 200, but we've managed to rock up 238, and we're still going strong. It's the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. I'm David Hinchliffe, and joining me on the line, as always, from Millfield School, is Mark Garraway, the Director of Cricket Coaching there. How are you, Garros?
I'm very well, thank you very much. It's a bit of a blustery day here. We've got leaves all over the cricket pitch in front of me, but the Glastonbury tour is clear in the distance.
Well, that's always good. It's always good to hear. It's the beautiful English countryside and holding up things for the big city. Back from his trip to America, it's Berners. Welcome back, Berners.
Hi, all. How's it going?
Yeah, good. How did your conquest of the USA go?
Yeah, good. Sampled 5 different variations of Dunkin' Donut and generally Big Willie style over in the States. It was all very good. Great facility over there that's just getting knocked up. So nice to be involved with that one. And be interesting to see the difference it makes, hopefully, with some local players there just outside of New York. So, more on that to come, hopefully.
Yep, fantastic. Very exciting times for American cricket and for Pitch Vision, of course. And speaking of going to unusual places to improve cricket, Gareth, you've been in Switzerland.
Yes, I have. I've been in a place called Studen, which is quite a long way from Zurich airport, we discovered when we got on a train. And it took us quite a long time.
But, that's lovely, though.
Yeah, we got there at 1 o'clock in the morning and started the course next morning at 9 o'clock. So got a bit of shut-eye and had 3 days there with two guys who are sort of cutting edge, really, of coaching methodology.
And you put up a great article about that this week around the concept of the language that you use and coaching the intention rather than the action.
Yeah, it's been something. I mean, I've been exposed to this type of coaching for just over a year now, really, and it's something that I'd have never have thought of before. But actually, when it's backed up by the science and the research, and these two guys head up sports institutes and neuro institutes from around the world and are working with a number of places in Japan and France and Switzerland and Finland and all over the world in working out how our brains work and also how that then goes into movement and vice versa. So whenever we talk about what we want somebody to specifically concentrate on, there's a very good chance that we're putting a blocker in the way of them rather than facilitating free movement. And as we all know from our own experiences, when we go at our best, we move as one. And there are ways and methods and language patterns that you can put around people that encourage them to do that.
Yeah, it's something that that has been hovering around for a while, the idea that you don't think of yourself as a collection of individual parts, your shoulder and your hip and the head and your elbow and all the rest of it, but those are the kind of words that you hear spoken by coaches often when they're trying to improve techniques. But what we're saying here is that it's more about trying to keep that body working as a whole unit by using slightly different language techniques.
Well, I'll give you an example that we did, because we did loads of testing of this type of stuff, and from watching me and from doing some tests, they work out how my body wants to work and wants to move. Now, anybody who watched me play football will tell you that I'm pretty terrible, and the football gene ended with my dad rather than myself. But we had an exercise where we had to kick a mini football towards a waste paper basket, which was up on top of a table. Yeah. And the 5 people in the room all had a go at it. And I was the only one who approach the ball in a way that Bale or Ronaldo, when they're taking a free kick, will approach the ball. And the other guys in the room all came around the ball like a Messi or a Beckham would do if they were approaching the ball. And the way that I was coached, because of the way that I move and because of how I am as a person, that these guys can work out, they said, all right, that organise your body in this sort of way, okay, but your intention is to get the ball to fly high before it drops in and pick a point in front of me that you want to see at the sort of peak of that that arc as the ball goes through the air. It was a relatively short distance, so I had to get the ball up and down and into the waste paper basket. And it took me about 20 goes to get it in there, but I must have hit the rim of the waste paper basket 11, 12 times before it actually went in. So I was pretty accurate. You know, my grouping was incredible. Yet my latent talent for football over the years has been dodgy, to say the least. And one of the reasons why, when we reflected back on it, is that I was being encouraged to kick the ball in what's called a horizontal way, because footballers get taught to kick the ball in a horizontal fashion. Yet my body wants to be vertical. And the players that are vertical that have done really well in the past, and you've heard me say this before, tended to listen to their body rather than the coaches that they were being taught by. So the example of a Ronaldo or a Bale would be somebody that we consider to be genius or do things differently, but actually they're just doing it in the way that I would do stuff. They just happen to do it very, very well and I don't. But our bodies are organised in a similar type of fashion to those two fellas, and they've just ignored their coaches, whereas little old me was trying to get better and better and better, and I was listening to my coaches and kicking the ball in a completely different fashion that wasn't akin to my body. I'm not saying that I could have been a Bale or a Ronaldo, but you understand the context of that.
Yeah, so what it seems like to me you're saying is that if you take the talent factor out for a minute and you just look at the idea of the ability to learn a skill, the way you can accelerate that is by knowing the way that your body moves, and that can be categorized in certain ways.
It can be, but then once we know that, we still don't coach the actions associated with the way that moves. We coach the intention. So in the article that is going to be out on the site, I talked about a lad who happens to be somebody who moves from the top, and top people generally use their, well, in fact, do use their head and their shoulders to get their their movement going. And so all I said to him is the intention is to get your head and your shoulder as close to the ball as possible. And all of a sudden he started to move because his movement had been freed, because it felt relaxed and it allowed his body go. And the next bit that they talk about is, well, once you've relaxed and you've allowed your body to go, you can adapt to whatever the stimulus is, the ball or the position you need to get into, and then you can perform. And that's what he started to do. And I literally said five words the whole of the session and just videoed him hitting balls like he'd never hit before. And as I said in the article, he had to stop three times because he was doing things that he'd never done before. And that was because his body was organising itself. So if we set the stimulus, if we set the intention, then the body will organise itself to come up with a successful outcome. Whereas what we tend to do is we try to coach the action, and then all that does is it puts blockers in around the way that the brain wants to operate, which then facilitates the movement, or the way that the movement facilitates, which then stops the brain from working in an optimal fashion.
And I know it's something that Greg Chappell has pointed out in the past, something similar, saying that there should be more freedom when players are learning to play, and less sort of structured coaching. And I guess that's along the same lines as well. And that ties in nicely to Sachin Tendulkar, who we were talking about before the beginning of the show, because he's finally put an end to his career. And of course, he was... when he was very young, he used to play huge amounts of cricket, just going from match to match on the maidens, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And, you know, that's where India, I suppose, is a really good example. Now, they've got less coaches per head than any other country in the world, but have produced huge amounts of natural talent, I think. And And what we see in India is we see different styles of play, and we always have over the years, whereas at times in the coach world, we've seen similar styles of play and similar approaches. And the same sort of thing applies in Sri Lanka. You know, a Malinga can come in Sri Lanka, can achieve in Sri Lanka. But at certain times within England, over the last 20, 30 years of the coaching industry growing, he probably wouldn't have had the opportunities that he does get in Sri Lanka because people would have wanted to change him. So Sachin's a great example, and he just played, didn't he? He learnt through playing and playing and playing, and obviously had the intention to score runs. And when he's been at his best, he's just allowed himself to flow. And that's why he's been one of the best sides in world cricket over the last X amount of years. I watched Gary Kirsten coach him when we were in India a couple of times.
That's and a Gary challenge, Hardly, isn't it?
Yeah. Gary hardly gave him any instruction. But he set a context and he set an intention when he coached. And he knew nothing about all the stuff that we're doing now. At the time, all he did was watch, observe, notice stuff, set a context. And one of the contexts, as I've said before on this show, is that Sachin would try and hit every single ball that he hit into the ground before he hit the net, which is where I got that idea from. And he used to find a way that his body would do it.
Well, let's mention Sachin briefly. I think as we talked about before the show began, there's been so much said about him that it's almost impossible to find something fresh to say. But I don't think you can completely ignore the fact that, you know, one of the finest batsmen to ever have lived has finally hung up his boots and his bat. Berners, any thoughts on Sachin?
I've had dinner in his lounge, actually. Terrific chap, but it's amazing, isn't it, really, when you look back. Silent assassin, never just went about his work, didn't he? Absolute model pro, no controversy, never any kind of conflict with other players. Everyone's got goodwill and, you know, nice things to say about him. What a good bloke, what a great guy.
Yeah, I think that's actually the most impressive thing about him, isn't he? He is a great bloke, as Berners says, but I think the most impressive thing is he's had unprecedented pressure put upon him for 24 years of his life in the public eye in the biggest country in the world for cricket. And yet he's gone about his business in a way that has been consistent. He's been a really good player throughout those 24 years. But more importantly, he's kept his feet on the ground, which is incredible. I mean, I used to struggle to do that on the Isle of Wight, where there was 106,000 people, and most of those didn't give a stuff about cricket. But he's in a country where there's a couple of billion, and they all love it. So it's an incredible thing that he's been able to do. And I really hope that he finds something now which can fuel him in the same way, really, because that's the challenge for every cricketer. But let alone one of the greatest cricketers of all time, who's the most revered player of his generation. So that's going to be interesting for me to watch from there.
I saw quite an interesting showreel, which just shows, I think it illustrated fantastically the guy's temperament. They showed about 10, you know, the classic no ball, waist kind of full toss high delivery by 90 mile an hour plus bowler to a batsman. Normal reaction of a batsman, obviously agitated, either strides towards square leg or towards the bowler for some kind of conflict in terms of what the hell have you just done? Don't do that. There's a great moment where Brett Lee, probably one of the fastest bowlers he's ever come up against, bowls him a very, very awkward delivery that kind of goes into his shoulder stroke neck at about 90. Brett Lee comes down the pitch to offer a bit of, you know, apologetic kind of handshake. Sachin walks straight down the pitch, shakes his hand, turns around, takes guard and starts batting. And there's, you know, there's ones where, you know, Matthew Hayden and the like, with the Simon Jones incident where he goes to throw down the stumps and it's a full-blown square off for 5 minutes and all the rest of it. And, you know, he was, what, you know, a great player as well in his own right, but just the way to deal with something and diffuse it and just carry on, I mean, absolutely fantastic to see.
Yes, so farewell to the little master. Hopefully he'll find something in the future that will be just as valuable to all his fans. But let's move on now to the yes-no round, which is to finish off this section of the show. Three questions, that Gareth and I can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. And Berners, you're back with the questions. So when you're ready, fire away.
First question. Most cricket clubs are value for money.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Players forget to warm up properly after a break.
Yes.
Yes.
Third and final question. Every young player should learn wicket-keeping skills.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, it's time for the mailbag now, and every week we have a couple of questions which are sent in by you, the listener, and the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to send in your question to be considered for the prize and also be answered on the show, then you can email us on coach@pitchvision.com, or you can give us a call and we will give you the numbers at the end of the show. But for now, Berners, you've got those questions ready. What's the first one this week?
First question comes in from John. He's got a 14-year-old son and he said that he has cricket training with his club team on Tuesdays, but also on the same day he goes to a very well-respected coach who gives him a little bit of one-on-one coaching for no cost. So obviously that's great for dad. His son also has club training on Fridays, but he has cricket games on Friday nights. So basically he can't attend club training. As a byproduct of that, which is typical in a lot of clubs, he unfortunately finds himself batting at number 11 due to not training. And he's obviously can't make training because he's got these other commitments. So his father's just wondering that there is an option for him now to attend senior training. And he's just wondering whether or not that would be more beneficial to the youngster to get some more cricket under his belt in the game situation.
I would be, if I was in John's position, I would be interested in talking to the coach directly and finding out exactly what the coach's sort of train of thought is with players who don't train, refusing to let them have a game. Basically, you know, just making them make up the numbers by saying, well, if you don't train, then you're batting down the order if you're a batsman, and if you're a bowler, presumably you don't get to bowl. I guess from a discipline point of view, I can understand it, but I don't really agree with it. So I think I would want to speak to the coach as my absolute first course of action and say, what exactly, when you've got a player in this situation where he is training and he's getting one-to-one training, so it's not like he's missing out on doing training, is there any way that we can work out a system where he doesn't have to suffer so he doesn't get a chance to play a game?
Completely, you know, we've got to look at context here, and whilst it's fantastic that the coach has got some values and some things that he holds dear, you've also got to consider the context and the opportunity that is being provided to the young player in question, who's getting some extra coaching which prevents him from always being at that session. The person shouldn't be penalised in terms of a match in batting number 11 as a result of that. Mm. And this is where integrated coaching practice comes in for me, where, you know, we have it at school. We have players at Somerset. We have players at Middlesex. We have players that go up to England, players at Leicestershire, players down in Devon. And if we all work in an isolated environment, then it's likely that the person who's going to benefit least is going to be the player, him or herself. So it's crucial that communication comes in. I would encourage the father to be the starting point of that, but then to possibly assign somebody to lead that process. So everybody who's at our school here is led by myself, and it's my role and my responsibility to make sure that all of the other key partners are kept in the loop. And in this day and age of technology, that shouldn't be difficult, because we can transfer video to each other, we can transfer messages electronically, so we don't always have to get two people in the same place to have that conversation. But initially, it's got to be down to dad and the coach in question that's putting the blockers on to have a discussion and to decide what sort of things and what sort of program is going to be best for the player, and how then all the elements of the program can contribute to where that person bats and where that person bowls on the Friday evening in the games.
Yeah, I mean, you want to watch out for, looking at it from the coach's point of view, maybe you want to watch out for the player who feels like he's getting a bit too big for his boots. He doesn't want to come to training because he's getting this high level one-to-one training, and therefore you know, he doesn't feel like he's part of the team anymore. You want to be cautious of that, but I don't think you want to punish a player for having access to good coaching as well. So I'm sure there's a way that a compromise can be met where everybody is at least a little bit happy. And the main thing, as you said, Gareth, is that the player gets something out of it. And it's a bit of a shame we don't know the coach's point of view, because the parent's point of view is often heavily skewed in a certain way. And that's natural. All parents are heavily skewed towards their children. That's kind of the way it works. So it'd be interesting to find out what the coach's perception is from that, because from this angle, it sounds like the coach is completely intractable and he's the one who's causing the problems. But I would like to hear what the coach's point of view is from that as well, because often you ask the coach something and you ask the parent something and you get two very, very different stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also have a situation that until the question is asked, until the conversation has taken place, you don't actually know how the coach is going to react. So it could be that he turns around and says, well, that's fantastic, I wasn't aware of that session. Or, you know, is there a chance that session could be moved every other week to another time slot? And then he could get the best of both worlds. You know, there's so many different things that can come from it. But the starting point has to be dad going to the coach and just having an open and robust conversation.
Yeah, and I think it's important to go into any conversation like that not thinking that it's a point of conflict, but you're trying to find where you agree with each other and not where you disagree with each other. And that's where it's going to be a positive conversation rather than one where both of you are taking opposite viewpoints and trying to convince the other one that you're right and they're wrong, because that's never going to work.
No, you're absolutely right on that. And these are... to me, these are the types of conversations that make the most ground, to be honest. And it's all about being open and robust in that discussion. And you know, always taking the gloves off a little bit and speaking about how you feel and how you're thinking. Because unless you get all of that information into a melting pot, it's very difficult to make an informed decision.
Absolutely. Well, good luck to John. Hopefully, John, you can find that compromise with the coach and everybody will be happy. And the key thing, of course, is to get the best from the player. That's what everybody wants in that set of circumstances. What's the next question, Berners?
Next question's in from Dan. He's an under-15 coach, and he's just wondering what the best form of pre-season prep would be. He's just pondering whether or not he uses the BATX system or whether just practicing in the central wicket, which is obviously very... lifelike, would be more beneficial for his boys, remembering that they're 15.
Right, before you answer that, Gareth, let me just give some background information here. So Dan is asking about the type of practice that he should do, and he talks about BATX, which if you're a regular listener to the show, then you will already know about. It's the system which allows you to make nets more realistic by playing a tape, or tape, but you know, playing audio that tells you how many runs you need to score in an over, and then you run the runs, and it brings in fatigue and it brings in run scoring and shot selection into a net session, which isn't necessarily about those things. Or he's comparing that type of practice with center wicket practice, where of course you go out to the middle and you play a small-sided game, or a customized version of a game of cricket to adapt to different scenarios. So the two very sort of similar goals on those two things. It's just that one is played in the middle with fielders, and one is played in the nets without the fielders. So Gareth, what kind of balance would you find between those two types of practice? And I would imagine there'd be other types of practice you'd want to throw in there as well.
Well, as you say, David, they're all very much part of a training programme. And as I've said before on the show, my belief is that you practice your techniques in a one-to-one or a small group environment where you've been really specific about your techniques. And that situation is about the next stage, is to test those techniques when you think they're ready, whether it be a repair or whether it be an enhancement. You test that in a match situation. And one of our best methods of doing that is nets. Now, the advantage of having a BATX system is then you're really getting a bit of a net situation with match context. That it's building the specificity towards the game, which is fantastic. So to me, you might have 2 weeks of doing that, get into a Batek's situation, 2 weeks of doing that, and then you flow between the centre practice and coming back into that technical area and the Batek's bit before you then go into a game situation. So it's really about marrying up what is needed. And I don't think there's any definitive model which can tell you exactly what you should be doing when. You could have a plan in your mind, but as we always say, you know, a plan only really lasts as long as first contact with the opposition. So, you know, we might go into a game on a Saturday and have an absolute stinker in an area or somebody's technique has broken down. Then we have to really apply that model in whichever way suits us best, rather than having, oh, we must do this and we must do that and we must do that. But my general plan of a progression is technical into nets, which Batek's is an enhancement of normal nets, into middle practice, and once you've ticked all of the bases there, then you take it out onto the stage and you perform. But you tinker around with it, whichever is relevant to any given individual or any given team that you might be coaching.
And a lot of it would be resource-based as well. I mean, if you only have access to nets, say it's, you know, winter training, for example, and you've only got indoor nets, then there's no, you haven't got any choice in the matter. You're going to have to use nets in one way or another. You don't have the option of middle practice. And then sometimes even in the summer, you know, might not have access to a centre wicket very often. And then occasionally you do, and then you can take advantage of using that middle practice. So a lot of it is another factor, I should say, in that planning process is what resources that you've got access to.
And I think we've all got nets, haven't we? You know, we've all got access to nets. And I think that's why Lawrence's product, Batek's, is a really good enhancement for any training session. Mm. And at its base level, you know, it's free. So give it a go. I'm certainly going to be doing that over the next couple of weeks with our players as well. And I'm going to be providing feedback for Lawrence via email or via Skype. But it's a no-brainer, really. If you've got an iPhone or you've got an Android phone, then get it downloaded and give it a go.
Yeah, it plays the audio and you can see how the players enjoy it or not, see if it works for you. And sometimes you hear rave reviews about a certain way of doing things and you try it and it doesn't seem to resonate with the players for some reason. And so you move on to something else, and there's nothing lost in trying it. It may work brilliantly, but if it doesn't work brilliantly, there's also no harm in moving on to something else if you feel like you can do something a bit more useful. So we haven't really given much of an answer there, Gareth, because the answer is it depends.
Well, it depends, as you say, on so many things, facilities being one of them. But if you have got access to Batek's, if you have got access to a middle practice, then I would go Batek's first and then take it into a middle practice in that way to start off with, and then tinker with it as you see fit. Because with all of the questions that we ever get here, the best people to judge that once we've given the answer are the people that are on the ground and in that environment.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And it's nice just to mix things up for the players as well. So they don't know exactly what they're going to get from practice session to practice session. It's, you know, that's if you're keeping things fresh and exciting and interesting for the players, they're going to be more engaged with it and they're going to be learning more quickly and more efficiently than if you're just doing the same thing every week and they get a bit fed up of it.
Exactly right.
Okay. Good luck, Dan. Let's know how you get on with that. That'll be interesting to see what kind of a plan you come up with and how effective it is throughout your season. Okay, so there's 60 seconds on the clock. Berners is lined up and ready to talk about something. We don't know what it is, but we're not going to interrupt him. We're not going to stop him, not until the minute's up. It's this week's Soapbox. Berners, over to you.
Well, I often don't know myself, but this week, heavily influenced by the current situation down under with our pantomime villain, Stuart Broad. It's a bit about reverse psychology and often it backfiring, as we can see that in certain situations, I think going against someone's, you know, goodwill and the way in which they approach certain things can often, have adverse effects, especially in highly contested environments where naturally that will to succeed and that will to win is, exaggerated slightly by what's going on. To not only have those pressures, but, you know, external ones also coming down on you. I think the only way you know, someone can really react to that is being positive. You're hardly going to run away and cry. So I think it's definitely not always advisable tool in someone's armory to actually diminish someone's prospects of doing well. So be careful what you say, because it might as well come back and backfire.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. As usual, I've enjoyed our 30 minutes of cricket conversation, but we have to wrap it up now. And the way that we're going to wrap it up is we're going to decide on the winner of this week's prize, which is the online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Gareth, you're in the chair as usual to decide on the winner. And our choices are John, who has his son who's has a problem with getting to training, and Dan, who has a problem with deciding what sort of training he wanted to do with his team. So which one did you prefer this week?
Two great questions, because they're real life situations, and that's what I love about this element of the show. This week I'm going to go with John, because I love a robust conversation, a gloves off, stick it all on the table and come up with an informed answer. So John, good luck with that, be brave, and enjoy getting the cricket course from us off of the Pitch Vision website.
Fantastic. Yeah, John, we would love to hear more from you. If we'd find out what happens, find out if you can come to some kind of agreement which is the best for your son. Now, Berners, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show, have their question answered, and also be in the running for that prize, what would they need to do?
They can give us a call. The number is 020-323-97543. Mm-hmm. Or drop us an email. The address for that is coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. There's also international numbers on the website, and you can also get us through the different varieties of social media. Our Twitter is at Pitch Vision Acad. Our Facebook is facebook.com/Pitch Vision Academy. And you can listen to this show every week if you so desire. You can just head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and click on the subscribe button to get it downloaded to your device every week. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you want to use something else instead, then that's great. Just go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll find the details for the RSS feed for getting it onto your device. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, guys.